to Comic Talk Today for Saturday, March 31st, end of the month, 2018. Welcome, one and all, to this show, whatever this is. Got a lot to discuss today. I've got some feedback I want to talk about. Got an announcement. Got a couple announcements. Got some news. And of course, I have to get to this week's top of the pile to see if my comic predictions from this past week actually came true or not. I want to kick off with a comment that I received about the episode. What day was that? Wednesday, I believe, where I did your booth is empty because you don't give a b-. So I had a nice message from at the Glenn Clark on Twitter, and apparently he had a similar experience. This is what he had to say. I love going to this con, but this year just seemed off. I went to one dealer who had about six long boxes and was digging through for the money books to rebuild my Superman collection. First appearance of Livewire, Doomsday Action, $7.75. The ones you're not going to find in dollar boxes. This vendor had a good bit of what I was looking for. I had a stack that added up to about $120. There were two people behind the table, one was facing me, the other way. Right before I was ready to make the purchase, a guy walks up and asks to see a New Mutants 98. Is that something that people are still looking for? New Mutants 98? I need to look this up. That can't be worth money. Well, I guess maybe it is now with Deadpool and the X-Force and all that. Anyways, the one guy clearly saw me money in hand. I wasn't even going to haggle, but paid all his attention as well as the other guy with the wall book. After a few minutes, I decided I wasn't going to buy from this dealer, even though he had a good bit of what I was looking for, but I hung around. After about 5 minutes, the other customer handed the book back and left. It was then that the other guy acknowledged me. I asked him if both of you worked at this booth, and he said yes. I then asked how many of you does it take to wait on one customer. He looked at me like he had no idea what I was talking about. I told him, you saw me money in hand, ready to make this purchase, and you chose to ignore me. So I would do my business elsewhere and handed him the books back I was going to buy. I could see if there was one person, but there were two. If all they wanted to see was wall books, why bring long boxes? And that is exactly correct. Why bring the long boxes? It seems to me like they're not going to make any money on the long boxes, right? They're going to make the money on the wall books. So thanks, Glenn, for the feedback. I appreciate that. And if you have a similar experience at conventions, I want to hear about it. Again, I don't want to know names, but I want to hear about it. Next up, I got feedback from Ed. Ed does, what's the podcast called? He does an Usagi podcast. The Ronin Rabbit, I believe it's called. Mighty Thorcast, Boom Addiction, all kinds of stuff. Anyways, Ed replied to my comments about the superhero comics when I talked to Ronnie about how I actually dug the Hydra Cap and wished they would have lasted longer. And he said, I'm kind of weird. I want my superheroes to be heroic and my villains to be bad. Hydra Cap and Darkseid on the JLA are just bad fiction to me. Both completely out of character based on thousands of previous stories. The trend of non-superhero superheroes baffles my mind. Vision, Mr. Miracle, the power heroes are all just written poo in my mind. Not what I read comics for. I just want to escape, not have my escapism become my believable next-door neighbor. If I want realism, I'll watch Roseanne. And let me tell you, Ed, you make some great points, but don't watch Roseanne. I try to watch that with my wife. My wife's a big Roseanne fan. And we watched the reboot, and I didn't laugh one time, I gotta say. I know I'm probably in the minority. I've heard some people actually really dig the show, but just wasn't for me. But to your point, I kind of agree. I do like the deconstruction of what it means to be a hero or a villain, and I'm glad that we're getting to see that a whole lot more. And I had replied to Ed something similar to the effect of, you know, I think especially if you read comics for a long, long time, you're used to a particular type of superhero comics, right? Especially if you're used to reading like Golden Silver Age, even like into the early modern age, and that's when things started to change. Back then, superheroes were actual heroes, and supervillains were actual villains. And over time, that hasn't become the case anymore. Now the lines are much more blurred, and I think a lot of that is definitely a response to the way our society has evolved. Because back in the 50s and 60s, I'm not sure how I want to phrase this, but I guess people were much more innocent. And that's actually probably not a fair statement, because people have always done kind of messed up things for thousands of years. But it seems like society was a lot more innocent, and we kind of went into those norms, right? Where like everyone followed the rules, and you know, everyone had to be prim and proper and the family values and all this other stuff. And then into the 60s and 70s, and of course much later, things changed quite a bit, and that wasn't the case anymore. So I think heroes have become much more complex because the way that people have become to be started to interact with one another has also become a lot more complex. And, you know, comics just are a reflection of the time, right? When we were in World War II, like that was the focus of a lot of books. Before the war, you know, you had a lot of crime stories, right? During the Depression era. And, you know, once you get to the 50s and into the early 60s, things were, I like to use the word flim-flam. So we'll see. I get your point, Ed. And that's fine. If that's the kind of books that you're looking for, then I gotta say, you know, with the way comics are now, you might have a tougher time finding current books that you want. At least if you want to read a lot, because I think a lot of creators are trying to do these new and different things, or playing around with the edgier side of comics. And, if that's not for you, then that's cool. I mean, there's decades worth of comics that you can read that are amazing still. So thank you, Ed, for the feedback. I very much appreciate it. And the last bit of feedback is from Josh McDonald. He writes for Batman-News.com, so that's cool. I love that site. So thanks, Josh, for listening to the podcast. And he pretty much said he agreed with the Rebirth Metal thing. I don't want to keep beating that to a dead horse, but he said, dude, I completely agree. I actually mentioned this a year ago back when Metal was first announced. Brought it back up again in my review for The Silencer over at BatmanNews.com. Good plug, by the way. Thanks. Silencer's great. And I read your review. It was a good review. So thanks for the feedback. And I guess it's time to talk about some other stuff. Briefly, I want to say that there is a Humble Bundle right now. A Dynamic Forces 25th Anniversary Humble Bundle. That ends in, as of the time of this recording, the time that this comes out, it'll be 4 days left. So this Humble Bundle will end on the next Wednesday, New Comic Book Day, which I guess is what, the 4th? Yes, the 4th of April. So, get in on this. It's actually, it's pretty interesting. There's a lot of stuff that I don't have, so I'm considering getting in on this. And it's from a bunch of different publishers. There's Red Sonja stuff, Green Hornet Year One, Gold Key Alliance, Miss Fury, Army of Darkness, Bionic Man, The Art of Atari, Sword Quest, Flash Gordon, The Boys, which I'm assuming The Boys is going to be hot coming up soon with that TV show they're making. Vampirella, George R.R. Martin's Clash of Kings, Kiss, Centipede, Darkness, Witchblade, a bunch of other stuff. So if you want to get in on that, I mean, you can't go wrong with, I don't even know how many books it is. They say it's $420 worth of books. So, you know what? Might as well. You can pay like, I think right now it's at like 15 bucks to unlock everything. So well worth checking out. Go to humblebundle.com and see the Dynamic Forces 25th Anniversary Humble Bundle. One more bit of announcement. Next week's Therapy Thursday will be returning guest Aaron Bell from Absolute DC. But I guess I can go ahead and say now that the week after that, Therapy Thursday will be a special episode. And we're going to play a special versus game. Because I will have Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler on the show. We're going to talk about comics and newsy stuff. And then we're going to play a game. Just like we do on every Therapy Thursday. But I kind of bought my way in with my love of their stuff. Not really. Zach was kind enough to reach out. And I was like, dude, you guys got to come on the podcast. So, of course, they write Cable over at Marvel, which is fantastic. It was one of my picks last week. And Coming to Me from Black Mask was the pick before that. And they've got a new Aftershock book coming out April 18th, which is in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, in 3 weeks. And it's called Her Infernal Descent. And it's about a grieving mother who descends into the nine circles of hell to reclaim her family. And I think it's going to be awesome. These guys do amazing creative work in all the comics that they do. And so I'm very excited to have Zach and Lonnie on the podcast. And we'll see how things go. Again, I promised my interviews are not going to be the normal boring interviews, so this is going to be a ton of fun. If you tend to avoid interviews, let me recommend you check this out, because those guys are amazing. We're probably going to end up talking about Philip K. Dick for an hour. You know, we'll see how it goes. But if you haven't added Her Infernal Descent to your pull list, you might want to go talk to your comic shop and do that. The artist on that book is going to be Kyle Charles. And as I said on Twitter, I have a giveaway. Our first giveaway of this podcast. I'm going to try to do these probably every couple months. And Brian Henk reached out to me. He's over at Overworld Games, and they are doing a Valiant card game, a deck-building game for Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. And if you've heard me talk about this show on the Valiant Central podcast, I'm hoping it comes out one day. But they're kind enough to be providing us with a copy of this game. It's going to be shipped directly from the manufacturer of the game. So thank you very much to Brian for offering that. And the game looks cool. I know they did a Valiant deck-building game, I want to say a year or two ago. They've done a couple. And I know that HyperRPG has done some stuff on their channel on YouTube where they actually play the game. And apparently they've simplified the game quite a bit. This is 1 to 6 players. And I was taking a look at it. It looks pretty cool. So I'm probably going to be pre-ordering a copy. That's going to be coming out on April 18th as well, the same day as Her Infernal Descent. And so we're going to run a contest from now until April 15th, and the rules are very simple. If you would like to be entered into the giveaway to win a free copy of the Valiant card game Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, all you need to do is either comment on an episode of the podcast on Twitter, on email, whatever you want, at Geekvine, at or comictalktoday at gmail.com, or you can leave an iTunes review. Now, I know the iTunes reviews take a couple days before they show up, so be mindful of that, because they have to be posted by April 15th. That's all you gotta do. Out of all those people, we'll do a random drawing, and then I'll announce the winner on the podcast, and then Brian will send you your copy of the game. So again, all you gotta do, comment on the podcast on Twitter. You can DM me, public tweet, whatever. You can email comictalktoday at gmail.com, or leave us an iTunes review. And I would very much appreciate the iTunes reviews, because we're getting quite a few. They've all been great, so I appreciate that. And keep those coming so we can keep sharing the podcast with other people. All right, so before we get to Top of the Pile, I want to very briefly talk about Fantastic Four. I know by now, if you're listening to this podcast, more than likely you have heard somebody or 300 different people talking about the return of the Fantastic Four. The book is going to be written by Dan Slott. The art is going to be Sarah Pacelli. And all they've shown right now is the cover, but I love what Dan Slott has done in Spider-Man. I know a lot of people maybe are not huge fans of Slott. That's fine. But Sarah Pacelli's art is incredible, and I cannot wait to see this. The book's going to be coming out in August, so that means that we still have a few months of Marvel 2-in-1 where Chip Zdarsky can keep doing his thing. That book has been amazing. I can't recommend it highly enough. I know I talk about it on like every episode, it seems, but Marvel 2-in-1 has been really, really great, and it's nice to see that Marvel has decided to bring back the Fantastic Four. I know a lot of people are very excited about it. It looks like with this whole Fox Marvel thing, they're really changing gears again, because as I mentioned in the episode, the Therapy Thursday episode with Ronnie, it looks like now they're going to be killing off the Inhumans, and seems from the teases that I saw leading up to the Fantastic Four announcement, they're going to also be relaunching Uncanny X-Men, so that's super, super exciting. I cannot wait to see what happens with Marvel in the next few months, and it really does seem like they're going to be bringing things back to the greatness that I remember from years ago. So, very excited for Fantastic Four. Be on the lookout for that, and I guess August solicits won't be out for a little while, but just keep an eye. And I'm sure whenever they come out, I'll make an announcement on this very podcast. Now it is time for Top of the Pile, which is the bulk of the show where I talk about some of the books that I read this past week. And I read a ton of books. Matter of fact, I read so many books this week that there is no way that I'll be able to talk about all the books. So maybe sometime next week I'll do a follow-up to this episode. What I'm really going to focus on right now is going to be the 5 books that I picked on the Comic Predictor on last Tuesday's episode. And then there's a couple of other books that I want to bring up as well. So I'm going to kick it off with Aftershock Comics' Rough Riders, Ride or Die number 2. This is, of course, Adam Glass writing, Patrick O'Leaf on art, Gabe Eltab on colors, and Sal Cipriano on letters. And this book is just incredibly fun, every single issue. Here we're getting a little bit deeper into the mystery of what these zombie-possessed people are, and we get a lot more about H.P. Lovecraft. And what I liked about this, yes, H.P. Lovecraft is a character in this book. Pretty much every character, all the major characters in this book are real life people. And that's what I like about Rough Riders, is that it's kind of like, it's not quite alternate history. It's more like secret history. And, because a lot of the events that happen in Rough Riders are based on stuff that actually happened historically. Unlike an alt history book where, they go a different direction, right? Like, what if the Nazis won World War II or whatever? You don't get any of that, right? Like, Roosevelt's president here. Houdini's like an escape artist still. Jack Johnson's a boxer. All that stuff actually happened. And, it's really nice to see an inventive book that tries to do something else in the superhero genre with characters who are not superheroes. And, I think that's really fascinating. Matter of fact, Ed, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you're reading Rough Riders, but, this is one for you. So really, really fun. H.P. Lovecraft is apparently the kid from The Sixth Sense. Because, as we learn at the end of the book, he can see dead people. And, I just love the hell out of this. The book reads so quickly, and, it's a shame that it's not like a 40-page book. But I understand the economics of comics maybe don't lend to that. But, again, thoroughly enjoyed Rough Riders Ride or Die number 2 from Aftershock Comics. I'm gonna go ahead and give this one a 4 out of 5. Just really, really fascinating. I hope that you guys are picking this up. I know it's the last volume. For now, at least, it seems. But really, really good stuff. Next up on my list is Factory, which I butchered the guy's name last time. Luckily, on the cover, he just shortens it to Elgo. So we're going to go with Elgo. And this is the European book that I was talking about from Titan Comics. And it's being put out by Statics Press, which is taking European books, translating them to English, and bringing them out here. The one issue I have with this line is that the books are much more expensive. And so I think it's very difficult for some people to want to pick these books up, because generally they're $4.99 or $5.99. And I know Marvel does that with a lot of their books, but the difference is that that's Marvel, and this is a smaller publisher. And I think, unless you're really into indie comics, a lot of people will have a tough time spending $5 or $6 on a book that they know nothing about. But Factory was really interesting. As I said on Comic Predictor, this is kind of like a mix of Mad Max and Fallout, the video game. And usually I hate when comic book companies put out something like that in the solicits. But I gotta tell you, for this one, it was spot on. That's exactly what it is. And it was really fun. The storytelling is much different than we're used to. I'm assuming because it's a European book. And the style of European books does tend to be a little bit different than American comics. And the art is just so strange. In many respects, it actually reminds me of Coming to Me, which I talked about last week or 2 weeks ago. It's very like surreal, but at the same time minimalist and gritty. And it's really, really interesting. The panel layouts are sometimes odd as well. There's a lot of like 3-page panels. But it really works for this book. Pretty much it's set in the future where humans are living in this factory, and there's like mutated people, and you know, I guess the world isn't quite as clean as it is now. I guess that's, well, is it clean now? I guess it is. Anyway, so there's people with like gas masks walking around, and it's just really, really odd. And in this factory, the humans have a precog, which is a being that can predict the future for them. And the precog pretty much looks like a fetus in a glass tube. And the leader of this factory uses the precog to determine what he's going to do next for their colony. And early on in the issue, the precog starts mutating extremely rapidly and ends up dying. And so some of the scientists at the factory decide to start trying to clone the precog based on tissue, and they can't quite get it right. So there's like a few different like clones that they create, and some are like missing limbs, and some are just even more mutated, and they can't quite get the precog powers right, and the guy's super pissed. But right before the precog died, he said to be careful of the man pig because he was going to bring down the factory. And sure enough, there is a man pig character, and they talk a lot about this. Because apparently mammals have been extinct from this place, and it's just humans in this post-apocalyptic world. But there's this man pig, and he has no idea where he comes from. There's a little play with him and one of the other characters about whether he's actually a man who was turned into a pig, or if he's just a really smart pig who thinks he's a man. I thought that was really interesting. So we have these two stories going side by side. The man pig and his crew walking through the desert. They're trying to find this sorcerer so that the man pig can, learn who he is and become a man again. And then you have the story of the factory and all that stuff that's happening there where they're trying to find the man pig and kill him so he doesn't take the factory down. So it's a little bit Mad Max, a little bit Wizard of Oz, and it's just super weird. They end up finding this talking monkey, which I didn't understand because if there's no mammals, why is there a talking monkey? But there's a talking monkey who tricks the man pig and his crew to eat these, like, there's like this plant with grubs on it, and the grubs drop flowers, and the flowers are like these little pig-looking things that they eat, and they become poisoned, and they start hallucinating. It's super, super weird, but I really enjoyed it. I think I'm going to keep on getting Factory. I'm going to give it one more issue and see, and if I decide, I like it enough where I'm going to get the trade if they do a trade, but I'm not sure if I want to continue doing the single issues once I see what happens in the next one. But Factory number one by Elgo from Titan Comics Stat Express was really quite enjoyable. I'll give this one, ooh, that's a tough one. I'm going to go ahead and just do a 3.5 out of 5 on this one, and I think it's well worth picking up. Again, I'm unsure because of the pricing, how well this book will do, but thoroughly enjoyable. I like this this weird post-apocalyptic stuff, so check that one out if you can. Let's do, let's see. Let's go to Avengers next. Avengers No Surrender, number 686. This is part 12 of No Surrender, and as I've mentioned in previous episodes of this podcast, I have loved the living crap out of the Avengers. I think it's been really fascinating, the stuff that they're doing with the Grandmaster and this new Challenger character that used to be the Grandmaster, spoiler alert, and then whatever Voyager is, everyone thought was an Avenger, but she may not be it. Well, by now we know she's not. Look, if you're not reading this by part 12, then chances are you kind of didn't care about the spoiler anyway. But Avengers No Surrender has just been fantastic. The art is amazing. This is Zub, Mark Waid, Al Ewing, just really, really great stuff. This issue is Hulk heavy because the Hulk was brought back from death last issue by the Challenger. And this Hulk is really interesting because Bruce Banner is in there, but he's not in control. The Hulk is completely in control. And what's cool about this Hulk is he's not the dumb Hulk. He's extremely brilliant and he's very articulate. And I really dug that. So I'm looking forward to see how the Mortal Hulk goes when that launches. I'm definitely going to be picking this up, but Avengers No Surrender, man, this has been really, really incredible. This is for sure a 5 out of 5, and that's from Marvel Comics. Since we're on the Marvel thing, I want to briefly talk about Damnation, Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider number 1 from Marvel Comics, and this was a bonus pick when I did the Comic Predictor, and it was quite interesting. It's Chris Sabella and Chris Noto, I believe, is the creative team. I should write these down. But it was really quite good. Johnny Blaze gets sent to hell after Mephisto kills him. And while in hell, Johnny Blaze and the Ghost Rider entity are two separate beings. And this pretty much has him going through the 7 circles of hell to find out what the hell's happening, how they can maybe reunite. Do they really want to reunite? I thought it was really interesting. This does kind of go off the Damnation Doctor Strange stuff, so you probably want to be reading that in order to kind of get the full gist of what's going on here. But it was a bonus pick, so I don't want to talk about it too much, but I thought it was pretty enjoyable. Not as good as I was hoping it would be, but I do love Chris Sabella, so I usually try to pick up everything that he does. Johnny Blaze, Ghost Rider number 1 from Marvel Comics. This is going to be a 3 out of 5 for me. If you're a Ghost Rider fan, you should definitely check this out. If you can kind of leave it or take it or leave it, then you can probably skip this one for now. Next up, Breathless number 1. This is from Black Mask Comics. Black Mask, if anyone over there is listening, please keep this book going. This is written by Pat Shand, art by Renzo Rodriguez, colors by Mara Jane Carpenter, letters by Jim Campbell, and Breathless pretty much has to do with this company that is harvesting monsters to create cures for diseases. And that might sound a little weird, but I mean, think about it. That's not too far off from the way that we find medicine and drugs now, right? A lot of the medicine that we get today comes from, proteins and stuff from bacteria or different chemicals that are found in plants. And so this just takes it a step further, and we're doing it from monsters, because in this world, there are real monsters. And a lot of the issue is set up so we do get to learn about all the different characters in the book. The main character is an assistant to a doctor who works for this company, and she's got severe asthma. And we do learn that as a contractor, she doesn't have health insurance. So she has asthma, she's got to get her inhaler, and every time she goes, she has to pay a bunch of money. Matter of fact, the pharmacist is very surprised by how much money she has to pay as a copay for her inhaler. And, of course, she goes to get it, and when she needs it, it turns out that her inhaler has a hole in it, and so she's got to kind of deal with her asthma attack. Luckily for her, as they're doing the autopsy on this one particular monster, she cuts into the lungs, and these spores come out of the lungs that cure her asthma. And so because of this, the company that she works for is very interested in researching more about this monster. So we get a little bit of a time lapse. You jump ahead a couple of months into the actual research, and it looks like it's going to be really interesting. I hope Black Mass can keep this book on schedule, on a regular schedule, not like a twice-a-year schedule. But yeah, it was really good. There's going to be some corporate espionage, it seems. I love the monster stuff. Like I said, when I talked about this on Comic Predictor, I really dig Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and this does give me that vibe quite a bit. Matter of fact, the main character, her best friend, is a monster. And she's homeless, living in this, like, cardboard castle. Like, literally a cardboard castle in an alley. And she brings her, like, spare parts from the monsters that they dissect so that she can eat. And so we see her turn into a monster. But really interesting concept. I really dug all the characters here. And Breathless number one is definitely pickup. I'm going to be continuing with this as long as they keep this book on schedule. Come on, guys. Keep it on schedule. So Breathless number one from Black Mass Studios. This is going to be a 4 out of 5 for me. Thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. Final pick really surprised me. Really, really surprised me. This is going to be from DC's Young Animal imprint, and it's Mother Panic Gotham AD number one. This is Jody Hauser writing, Ibrahim Mustafa on art, and it was incredible. Incredible. I posted this on Twitter. I read about 25 books this week, and there were some really, really close calls as to what would be in my top, like, 3, we'll say. And this, like, squeezed itself into the number one spot. And I think a lot of that had to do with the Joker appearing in this book. And I'll get to that in a second. But this book kicks off... A lot of it has to do with the way Mother Panic ended the first series. There's stuff that happened in the Milk Wars that directly affects this book as well. And we're kind of in this alternate timeline now where it takes place 10 years in the future. There's no Bone Ratman in Gotham. Batman's gone. There's no heroes except Mother Panic. And even she is different, because originally she was supposed to die in this fire, and as we learn very early on in this issue, she's the only survivor of the fire. And so she has to learn to deal with that, and she's learning all the differences that have come about in this new timeline as a result of that. And it was just really well done. I think a lot of that has to do with the art. I love Mustafa's art. It's dark and gritty, and even scratchy to some extent. And what really surprised me is the writing from Jody Hauser, because it's no secret. I've talked about this mostly on the Valiant Central podcast, because she was doing Faith over at Valiant. But I've had this, like, love-hate relationship with Jody's writing. And upon reading Mother Panic, I learned that it's not quite that I don't like Jody's writing. It's that maybe I just don't like some of the projects she gets put on. Because in this book, even the first Mother Panic series, I really, really dug it. Matter of fact, for a little while, it was the only young animal book that I was reading. I think once you put a writer in a specific book where it really clicks for them, that might be more important than what the actual book is about or who the characters are. Because Mother Panic has been incredible from the beginning, and I think Mother Panic Gotham AD really kicks it up a couple of notches beyond that. And I was just so, so impressed with the way that this book was laid out, how the story was told. And again, some of that may have to do with the Joker, because we do get the Joker in here. Again, this is in the future, and he's so creepy, right? If you remember when Snyder was doing Batman, he had that whole thing where Bruce had lost his memories, and Joker was there, and he lost his memories, and they met at that bench in a park. Mother Panic Gotham AD does that. It has that scene in here, except it's Mother Panic and the Joker, because Mother Panic is looking for a particular person to help her figure some stuff out. But the Joker thinks that she's looking for Batman, because he's been looking for Batman for years. And he talks in these, like, almost like, he's singing, right? Because we see musical notes, but they're like riddles, kind of. And I thought that particular aspect of the book was so interesting. The way that Jody did Joker here may be one of my favorite Jokers that I've seen in years. It was really, really quite good. So Mother Panic, Gotham AD number one, Jody Hauser, Ibrahim Mustafa, this is DC's Young Animal. For sure, for me, this is a 5 out of 5. I highly, 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 highly recommend you pick this book up. It is incredible. From start to finish, the writing, the art, everything was just so, so well done. And I will definitely be picking up the next issue of this. A couple of the books that I read that I want to bring up. One, I forgot that it was coming out, and that's my bad. And that is Cyberforce number 1, Mark Silvestri, Matt Hawkins, Brian Edward Hill, and Attilio Rojo. And this is a complete relaunch of the Cyberforce franchise. Cyberforce has been one of my favorite things from Image for many a decade. I want to say it was pretty close, man. When they launched Image back in 91 or 2, whatever it was, Cyberforce was always my top 3. Wildcat, Stormwatch, Cyberforce. And over the years, they've tried different things with it. They've rebooted some things. They've changed the timelines a little bit. And I've loved every single aspect of that. This particular issue is very Stryker heavy. Stryker's dying, so he has this procedure to make him part robot, I guess we could say. And it's really well done. This is crazy serial killer terrorist in the background, creeping everybody out. Their relationship between Stryker and his daughter is really well done. So I look forward to this one. If you've been sleeping on Cyberforce for a little while, I suggest you pick this up. It's Brian Edward Hill doing this, and he's going to be doing that detective arc, and then most likely the Outsiders. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. He does fantastic work at Top Cow. Him and Matt Hawkins, of course. I'm not sure how involved Silvestri was in this issue, but it's really quite good. I don't know if he actually did much. He's probably just creator. Maybe it's like a plot credit. But Cyberforce number 1, I look forward to seeing where they take this one next. The Witchblade reboot has been quite good also, so if you're not reading that, check that out as well. I think there's 3 issues out, I want to say. Maybe 4. 3 for sure. Cyberforce from Top Cow, Image Comics. The last one I want to bring up is Shadow Man number 1. This is from Valiant Comics. This is the relaunch slash reboot slash retcon of Shadow Man, who's been missing in action as a key character in the Valiant Universe for several years now. He hasn't had his own book. He did show up in a couple of the other properties, particularly in Ninjak. And this was a tough one for me, because when I first read it sometime last week, I really hated the first issue. But then I saw a couple comments. I was on the Valiant podcast with Chris and Daryl and Mike, and we were talking about it. And of course, the book hadn't come out, so they hadn't read it. Didn't want to talk too much about it, but the conversation that we had made me want to reread this book. So since that, I've reread this 3 more times. So I've done 4 readings of this, and I've ended up actually kind of liking it. And I think part of my initial dislike for the book was the way that the titular character was handled, because I would say the central character of this book is Elisa, who was a love interest kind of at one point for Jack, for Shadow Man. She was kind of maybe a mentor as well, kind of a sidekick as well. I think her characterization in this issue was really fantastic. And part of me actually wishes that we had seen less of Shadow Man in this issue and a ton more of Alyssa. And based on the first issue, I really hope that as the book goes forward, they do decide to make this Alyssa heavy, because her character really has changed and evolved and grown quite a bit since the last time we saw her. I should say, this is Andy Diggle and Steven Segovia with colors by Ulises Arreola. She has grown so much, and I found her character in this issue really fascinating. But what bugged me was the way that Shadow Man himself was handled, because there's some like weird voodoo magic thing where he pops through a portal and helps Alyssa find or battle this monster in the woods, this Loa monster. And then you've got these weird, like, kind of callback to their relationship. In this timeline, it's been like 5 years, I think they say, between the time that Jack went to the dead side and now that he's coming back. So, of course, their relationship was put on hold. And in that time, Alyssa became a voodoo priestess, like hardcore, a mambo. And it was cool. It was well done. Matter of fact, there was a dig in here against Punk Mambo, which I thought was interesting, because Punk Mambo was probably the only character from this like magical side of that universe that that really stayed constant at Valiant Comics while Shadow Man was gone. And of course, we haven't seen Alyssa since the last Shadow Man book. So it was quite interesting. We do see the return of Baron Samedi, who was a central villain for Shadow Man in the previous ongoing series as well. And I hope that they play a lot with the voodoo aspects of the book. I think that's really what was missing from Shadow Man. They tried to do that magic stuff, but it just didn't quite work out because they weren't steeped in the intricacies of what makes voodoo culture different than other magical systems. And if they really stick to that voodoo stuff, there is so much stuff that they could play with. I know they tease quite a bit about the history of the Loa, the spirit that possesses Shadow Man. I hope we get to see that history. And we saw quite a bit about the pantheon of Loas in voodoo religion. So if that is where the book is going to be going forward, then I think this could end up being something special. The problem still remains for me, Shadow Man himself, because there's been so much done with him and none of it worked, and Andy Diggle's got a tough road ahead of him because he's got to revitalize this character that has just been kind of thrown by the wayside, experimented on so much, and now they need to just bring him back to basics. If he can accomplish that, then I think Shadow Man could end up really being one of the keystones of the Valiant universe. So, for now, I'm going to rate this one a 3.5 out of 5. It was enjoyable, but again, I look for more as the arc progresses. And I think that's going to be it for this episode of Comic Talk Today. This has been Top of the Pile. Thank you for listening. I hope you picked some of these books up. If you didn't, shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. But if you did, I want to know. I want to know what you thought about these. And, of course, don't forget the giveaway. Again, all you got to do, leave a comment on Twitter, via email, comictalktoday@gmail.com. Leave an iTunes review. You can of course go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, or get the link directly from nerdlegion.com/podcast/CTT. If you want to do a Stitcher review or a Google Play Music review or any of the other ones, then feel free to do so as well. I will keep track of those, but I believe the majority of people use Apple Podcasts to listen to podcasts, so we'll go with that. And again, that's going to be for the Valiant Universe, Ninjak vs. Valiant Universe card game, which looks actually pretty fun. Pretty, pretty fun. That's going to be it for me today. No episode tomorrow. I will most likely be back on Monday. I've got a couple very interesting topics I want to discuss next week, and I want to get some conversations going. So look out for that. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. Happy Easter!